Hello and welcome to another cheap edition of the Pittsburgh Sports Memories Podcast. I'm your co-host, Steve Wirt, and as usual, I'm joined by...
I'm Tim Hannon.
And I'm not cheap-shotting Tim Hannon right now, I promise. If I could, I would, but no, I'll try to refrain.
You only do that when I'm not present. Or on the internet.
Yeah, there you go. Physical cheap shots, though, not so much anymore.
Okay.
So, like, this episode's all going to be about what I would consider cheap shots. And I guess, like a lot of things, it's in the eye of your observer or eye of the beholder. Much like beauty, cheap shots are in the eye of the beholder. So, I mean, physicality is a part of pretty much all sports. I mean, except for like maybe basketball, baseball too anymore. But when does that cross the line from, oh my goodness, we're just playing good old fashioned hard playing to, oh my goodness, you've now gone into cheap shot territory? I would define that as you're making a play that's not within the rules of the game, or you're not trying to do something that's going to get you the ball or score a goal or, prevent a play, runs from scoring. You're just doing intent to injure. And I think that's why cheap shots are very subjective, is because determining someone's intent, I'm not inside your head. I can only watch what you're doing. So, and I think also something else that I've noticed is if a person gets injured, if a player gets injured, it seems to carry a bigger penalty than if a player doesn't get injured. And it depends on the player. I mean, now that's just life, it depends on who does it to whom. And, and also I think this has increased, whereas back in the 70s, it was just, or before that, you didn't have like high definition video and super slow-mo. You didn't see this. It wasn't as obvious. It was harder to detect. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with intent being the key word there, because a lot of times things happen. A lot of times it's I was going full speed and I couldn't stop myself, and I was trying to make a play and he ducked his head and right. So it really is all about intent.
And I obviously as fans we're biased, when we see like our favorite player get hit and, get hurt, you're like, oh my goodness, that should be a penalty. Especially in hockey, it seems to go that way. But football's getting that way too. And baseball was never, I don't really have any basketball ones on here because we only have like Pitt basketball, and I don't really remember any super, cheap shots. So, well, without further ado, and as for this, we're going to rate these on a scale from Lady Bing to Vontaze Burfict. And if you're not familiar who Lady Bing is, she was married to somebody that, whoever's in charge of Canada? I think it was somebody in charge of Canada. And she, in hockey, she would award every year the most, sportsmanlike player. So normally that's a guy that doesn't go in the penalty box, doesn't hit guys from behind, doesn't hit people with their elbow or slash them. So, a little bit. And of course, Vontaze Burfict, if you don't know who he is, he was a linebacker from the Cincinnati Bengals and then later the Raiders, who was just, I don't think he ever saw a dirty hit he didn't like. And he eventually pretty much got kicked out of the league because of it. He wouldn't adjust his play. So,
yeah. Marie Evelyn Bing, by the way.
She married to? She was married to like somebody.
Lord Bing, the 12th Governor General of Canada, whatever that means.
So maybe he was pre-prime minister days or something. I don't know.
I don't know what they do up there. I didn't even think they really had an organized system. So... kudos to them for having some people in power, I guess.
You're not familiar with Justin Trudeau or
just some good natured teasing, that's all. We love you, King.
Well, the first up is a pretty obvious one. Lynn Swann, he was a clothesline by the Raiders. And we do have some like more audio on it. It's kind of like the announcers. And this was a game. It actually happened a couple times. And the one we're going to show is the one from the opening day. Was that 1976, Tim? I think.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
And it actually happened in the championship game the year before. They had actually picked on, and it was mainly a guy, Jack Tatum hit him pretty hard, but there was a guy named George Atkinson who really was the chief culprit. And we'll go down and we'll see what we can hear some audio on this one.
Let's see if we can take a look and see how Lynn Swann got hurt. I'm telling you, they're picking on Lynn, and I don't think you're supposed to do that. You know what I mean? I think that's Atkinson did another no-no and give him a karate chop across the back of the neck.
You mean you're not supposed to take a guy's head off?
I think that's a no-no. I don't think you're supposed to do it. I really do.
Was that, what's his name? The old Dallas Cowboys quarterback? Was that Don Meredith?
Dandy Don, yeah. That was Dandy Don. Yeah. Yep.
So, what if you didn't hear, karate chop to the back of the neck pretty much describes it accurately. Like, Lynn Swann's just running in the middle of the field. There's no pass thrown to him. He's not going to make a block. I think it was a pass to Franco, and, like, he's 20 yards away from the play, and George Atkinson just literally runs up behind him and hits him in the back of the head. After this game, like, Chuck Knoll called the Raiders a criminal element. And, you know, it was really bad. I mean, was this the year did we cover this year in another podcast? Was this the Steelers drama season, or was that another season?
That was, so this was the year that they had all those injuries. They made it to the AFC Championship game and lost to the Raiders. And then the next off season is when
the lawsuit
happened over the comment that Chuck Knoll made after this game.
Yeah, so the day after the game, Knoll rose before a luncheon press conference in Pittsburgh and spoke coldly of a criminal element in the NFL. He said that players like Atkinson should be kicked out of the league. Pete Rozelle, who was the current commissioner and actually kind of like he was the founding commissioner of the NFL, did fine Atkinson $1,500 after watching a tape of the play involving Pete Rozelle fired off a letter to Atkinson and said, in 16 years in this office, I do not recall a more flagrant foul than your clubbing the back of Swan's head totally away from the play. Our sport obviously involves intense physical contact, but requires of all players discipline and control and remaining within the rules. Every player deserves protection from the kind of unnecessary roughness that could end his career. And the only reason we know this, and it's not like buried in like some NFL, because this should have, like, really, this is an internal NFL memo. Do you know why this was?
Why it went public?
Yeah, was I think it was the lawsuit. Yeah.
Okay.
It was because Al Davis sued. Was it Al? Yeah, it was Al Davis, or was it one of the Raiders? I think it was one of the Raiders.
It was Chuck Atkinson. Yeah, but it was like, I mean, Davis was orchestrating the whole thing.
Yeah. This never would have come to light, and they kind of looked really bad, you know, because of this. So, but they didn't take kindly to being called a criminal element. And it's rare, like Chuck Knoll, like we said, like this and the Jerry Glanville thing, like that's probably like as controversial as Chuck Knoll ever got, quite honestly.
Yeah, and the Raiders, the Raiders at that lawsuit, they argued that Mel Blunt, he spiked Cliff Branch into the ground in the same game, and so they were arguing, well, their players do the same thing, so is it really, you know, it's totally unfair for him to single out Atkinson when his players are doing the same kind of stuff. And then Knoll did a sort of a poor job of defending Mel Blunt. He kind of said, well, yeah, Mel Blunt shouldn't have done that either, and that ticked off Mel Blunt. I mean, it was a whole mess.
So I don't know if Mel Blunt got fined for the Cliff Branch thing, but
he didn't. I mean, this was very, yeah, like, if you think the NFL,
well, they didn't even have the video of it. Like, he had to go to NBC, Pete Rozelle, to get, so like this is before like they were, like, you know, now
internet and all that, well, stuff. Yeah,
it was even before like the 80s where they would go back and look at the film and be like, okay, mm-hmm, you're getting a fine. That started in the 80s, right? Like Chuck Cecil, he played for the Lions. Remember, he would like jump off his feet into people. Yeah, like people like that. So I gave this one the full perfect because it definitely there's no reason to do this besides intent to injure. There's no play being made. This guy's not. It's not even debatable, really.
You do wonder if Atkinson doesn't get fined if Chuck Noll doesn't make a stink about it, because at the time the Steelers had won, they were the two-time defending Super Bowl champions. They were kind of in that position where the NFL, true to the NFL, just like it is 50 years later, it's a very reactive organization. Yeah. Oh no, something could hurt our image, so we better react to it instead of, you know, getting in front of it like we should. And this was, I think it was just like the best team in football, the team everybody knows, is making a stink about this. Chuck Noll, who didn't make a, like you said, didn't make a stink about anything. And I just, that was the kind of the basis of the lawsuit, is that Chuck Noll defamed him, and that's why Roselle got involved. Whereas today, the league would just take that up immediately.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess things have changed for the better in that consideration. So, moving to hockey, we're going to have like a pair of hits by, because I think these kind of go together. And I kind of ranked them separately, but they're two separate hits, and they're both involving Sidney Crosby. And I think the first one kind of leads to the second one, even though they're by different people on different teams. It definitely is part of the same injury. And the first one is Sidney Crosby in the Winter Classic. Do you remember the Winter Classic at Heinz Field? Do you remember Heinz Field? Yes. Yeah. Like Acrisure Stadium. But yes, they played an outdoor hockey game at Acrisure Stadium for everybody that doesn't remember 2011. All right. So nevertheless, the Penguins are playing in a Winter Classic because it's good ratings and it's against Ovechkin. It's Ovechkin, Crosby, and enter some schmuck named David Steckel. Who cares about David Steckel? Well, nobody much except for Sidney Crosby. And here we'll play the audio of this hit.
Well, this last minute, Sidney Crosby fell a couple times, but watch Crosby there. He gets blindsided. I believe that was David Steckel that was going up the ice, trying to draw in the play, jump into the play, and there you see Crosby getting some attention.
So what happened here was Crosby's in the capital zone, and he's just literally, he doesn't even have the puck. He's nowhere near the puck. And as far as I know, you can't hit people without the puck, or at least having touched the puck. You can't just go around hitting people. Well, that's what David Steckel does. He's just skating up the ice. He actually goes out of his way. Well, maybe not completely out of his way, but as he goes by, he literally sticks his shoulder out and hits Crosby in the head as he's not looking, because the puck is like going up the ice. And it literally spins Crosby in the air. And that kind of starts like Sidney Crosby's whole concussion thing. And I think he left that game. But I think that was definitely a perfect hit, because there's no play on the puck being made, and it was definitely an intent to injure.
Yeah, that was dirty. I absolutely think that was dirty.
Because there was no play. There's no puck. There's no, not, he's not in front of the net. He's not doing anything like to score, or, you know, it's just, it's not preventing anything, and it's not even like a whoops, oh my goodness, I just messed up. That was intentional. And I don't think anything was ever done to David Steckel about that. I think he totally got away with it.
No, I'll get on my soapbox a little bit later about that, but I'll let you go through all these hockey ones first, because that's very typical of the National Hockey League.
Well, and so now later there was another hit from a guy named David Krejcik in Boston. And that one, Crosby did end up missing 60 games, and I think it was the following year, but I think those started to add up.
Right.
So here's the one by Krejcik, and I have a little bit of a different opinion on this one. We'll play the audio.
Crosby wins the faceoff back to Brooks Orpik. David Krejcik knocks it down at the line, fends off the Crosby hit.
Now, it doesn't sound like much, and it doesn't look like much, but he got hit, that's a whoops. Like, the guy, Krejcik, kind of lifts his elbow up. But Krejcik has the puck, and he's against the boards. And Crosby's going in to check him and get the puck. So this is a hockey play being made. And Crosby literally, in my opinion, knocks himself out as he goes in to get the puck. But it's a hockey play. Hockey's a rough sport. this is what happens. This I classified as a Lady Bing hit because I don't think there was anything unsportsmanlike about that, even though this was much worse in as far as Crosby's injury. He ended up missing 60 games because of this hit. And it's just, you know, so once again, I think that goes back to, if you judge a hit by, oh, this guy was injured or not, then I don't think you're going to come up with a fair assessment of what actually happened in that play.
Yeah, that's a good take. It's really not. I don't think that was a dirty hit. That was a bang bang play along the boards.
The guy had the puck. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not that. That's so different than like way away from the play. And like you said, it caused damage, but would it have caused that damage had it not been for the Steckel hit the year before? Because that's really what started that whole mess with his concussions and with his neck. And he really missed the better part of two seasons there in his prime, which really stunk. But I agree. I think that this, to me, the Steckel hit was dirty and it kicked off the whole thing. The crazy thing was just, you know, unfortunate.
So continuing with hitting people in the head for no apparent reason. this is a Tim edition. So Matt Cook on Ryan McDonough for the Rangers. Matt Cook is Matt Cook. He's not quite a goon. Like, I would classify, there's like guys that are goons, like Marty McSorley. Who was the other guy? Bob Probert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ty Domi, guys that would fight. Matt Cook wasn't a fighter per se. He was just.
He was a physical player that didn't know how to like not hit people dirtily.
Yeah.
And this is definitely, let's play the audio on this.
Well, let's see this from the opposite side.
That is nasty. That's a flying elbow. He's going to see, I guarantee you, he's going to sit some games for that one. Absolutely. He had one thing in his mind, and that was to separate the helmet from the head of Ryan McDonough. That was a cheap shot by Matt Cook.
Yeah, just to describe, Ryan McDonough is on like the center of the ice along the boards, and Matt Cook literally skates from like, I don't know, downtown Manhattan with his elbow out to like hit him in the, like, it's pretty blatant that was an intent to injure. At least he kind of had the puck before. I think he like shoveled the puck away and then he hit him. So at least there was some sort of hockey play going on. And I guess that's what differentiates Matt Cook a little bit from the other guy, but that's a dangerous play. And you can call that anyway, roughing, boarding, elbowing, charging. Like, he had more than five steps. You can't have more than five steps going into the guy on the boards. At least the guy's back wasn't to him, and you hit him in the head. So, I mean, he ended up getting, 17 games and the playoffs, which that was a major league penalty at the time. But once again, I think Matt Cook's reputation had kind of preceded him at that point. He had had a lot of other run-ins with the NHL safety. What is it? They call it player safety office. And I forget who was running. It was somebody, a joke. It was like Chris Pronger or some goon was running the player safety
office. I think it was Brandon. I think it might have been Brendan Shanahan, who was not the cleanest player. Yeah.
It's always like a good, like, let's put Bob Probert in charge.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the rare times. So, I mean, I like that we have
this was here. Deserved. This was deserved.
Yeah, I like that we have this in here, too, because I think we're trying to be fair here, too, right? This isn't just, our guys always get cheap shot in, and we never do it. Like, no, we've had Pittsburgh players that have been guilty of the same, and this is one of the more egregious instances. And Matt Cook, and you're right, this wasn't his first offense. He did this kind of stuff a lot. And this was like, this one was so blatant. The NHL finally stepped in. They're like, look, you're gone basically the rest of the season.
I think if he wouldn't have went for the guy's head, if he just would have hit him in like the chest or something, they probably would have just given him like a 5-minute major and would have called it a day, maybe a fine.
Yeah, he stuck his elbow way up in the air just so he could get him right in the head.
Yeah, yeah. I think Craig, or not Craig, the other guy, Steckles, was worse, but because at least this guy had the puck like in a couple seconds.
But I mean, still, it was one of the rare times the NHL actually kind of, again, did the right thing. And I think that that hurt the Penguins a lot that year because they lost the first round of the playoffs to Tampa Bay in a 7-game series. And that really hurt not having Matt Cook in that series. But again, he had to play differently. And to his credit, he did after that. I thought he came back and adjusted his game and didn't have too many of those incidents afterwards, at least.
So in our trio of Penguins penalties that involve elbows, you know where I'm going with this one, huh, Tim?
Yep.
That would be the Sidney Crosby, Jacob Trouba incident. And this one, I think, out of all of them, actually had a direct effect on the Penguins losing. I mean, you know, I will say this. The Steckel one definitely cost Crosby probably a shot at making, like, a run at Wayne Gretzky. Like, if he doesn't get that hit, maybe he's, like, where Ovechkin is or around Ovechkin's numbers. But this cost the Penguins a playoff series. So Penguins lead 3-1, and they actually have a 2-0 lead in the second period. It's the middle of the game. It's 10 minutes gone in the second period. So that's like what exactly, like, the Rangers season is down to a half an hour at that point. And a gentleman named Jacob Trouba decides, hey, he's going to do some stuff here.
Yeah, and a lot of worry, of course, on everybody's mind. Early in the game, he took that high stick. He took a couple of bumps throughout the game, but I think towards the end of the middle of that second period, this chicken wing there by Jacob Trouba was the one that may have affected Sidney Crosby as he exited the ice at that particular moment.
So there was a play in the middle of the ice between the dots. And I will say this, at least it's a hockey player. It's not completely, like, dirty. But he comes in, and Crosby kind of kneels, like he's squatting down maybe a little bit. And Trouba sticks out his elbow, which that should at least been – I don't think no penalty was called on that. Should at least been an elbowing call, I would have thought. But it happened really quick, and you might have not caught it if it didn't – if you didn't see it in slow motion, and they don't really call penalties in the playoffs anyway, but it did catch Crosby in the head, and it ended up, I think was he out for the rest of the series for that, Tim?
I think he might've came back for game 7, but he was out for the next couple of games.
At least. And that kind of, like, so in defense of the Rangers, like, if the Penguins just play good defense and can hold on to a 2-0 lead for 30 minutes, it just doesn't even matter. You know, maybe it's right. Like, one of those more background things, like, oh, well, you know, Crosby, you know, you don't really know as much, but because it goes to 7 games and the Penguins actually lost their first road game 7 of in franchise history in Madison Square Garden. So I rated this more of a borderline perfect. I know people were really up in arms about this at the time, especially with Sidney Crosby's, you know, history of concussions. I don't see it as blatant as the other ones. I think they should at least, if they would have caught it, like, I could see how you could miss it because it was kind of quick and it was in the middle of the ice. Like, and it was subtle. Like, he subtly stuck it. It wasn't like the Matt Cook situation where he was, like, literally coming all the way across the ice with his elbow up.
Yeah, it's just.
But they don't. But once again, if that's Tom Brady or Wayne Gretzky, it gets called.
Well, yeah. So, and that's the big difference, right, between the NFL and the NHL.
Well, even because Wayne Gretzky and anybody else, like, if this is if you even sneezed on Gretzky, tell me they're not calling a penalty and you're suspended career.
Yeah, and the NFL has taken drastic measures. They don't even care about intent. I mean, there's guys like Casey for the Steelers when he got suspended. This past season, right? It's like they don't even care. Hey, I was diving. I wasn't dirty, but it's like you violated whatever role there is. You led with your head. You did whatever, right? They don't.
Yeah,
they're going to take drastic measures to protect the players that they know people are buying tickets to see, and the NHL doesn't care. And you know, Mark Madden, you can disagree with him a lot. You know, I'm up and down on him a lot with his opinions, and I know a lot of them are just for shock value. But he's spot on when he talks about this because he always says no one's going to buy a ticket to see Jacob Trouba play hockey, and the NHL doesn't care. They just don't get that, and that's why they're the fourth, you know, ranked league out of all the American sports leagues, because they don't understand what people want to see. They don't understand who the stars are. They don't understand that people want to see the stars. They don't want to see Jacob Trouba throwing elbows. They want to see Sidney Crosby making nice plays. And the NFL gets that. That's why if
I would say the NBA gets that. That's why like Jordan and LeBron get every Steph Curry. They all get their call. Yeah.
And if some no-name safety took a shot, hit, you know, Patrick Mahomes in the head with an elbow, that no-name safety would get fined and suspended automatically. But the NFL or the NHL just doesn't, they don't get it. They just don't get it. I don't know that they ever will. They probably will after Crosby retires and the Penguins don't have a marquee star. And then you'll see everything change and just say, man, this would have been nice when we had Crosby, Lemieux, Yager, et cetera.
Well, there's always been that complaint too that, oh, Crosby should have went to the Rangers. And even you hear that like now in, what were we, 2024, like they're just so desperate for Crosby to get out of Pittsburgh and go to, you know, what they consider a big market, you know, whether that's Toronto or New York or, you know, LA or wherever they want to put him, you know. They just, you know, they don't, I think there's a lot of media, especially in Canada, that doesn't like the fact that Sidney Crosby plays for Pittsburgh. I think they wouldn't be as mad if he played for New York or Chicago or Detroit, but definitely Pittsburgh is a problem for the Toronto fans.
Oh, I'm sure. But I still think even if he played for Toronto, again, we've seen this with other, it's not just Crosby. We've seen this with other NHL talent. They just don't care. They just don't. They're like, hey, you know, keep your head up, right? They just don't care. So it's the mentality that they have. It's like I said, it's just, it is what it is. You have to accept it or just stop rooting for hockey. it just sucks. It's like, it's like what we always talk about with college football and the conference alignments and the lack of a national championship. You say, boy, I can't believe that somebody wouldn't fix this. And then they don't, you just shrug your shoulders and say, okay, I guess we'll just accept the way it is. But it's ridiculous.
Sting with that was, I thought, borderline. This one definitely is. There's no borderline about it. And we're sticking with hockey, and this is definitely the definition of garage league. And for some reason, it involves the Rangers again. I don't know why it is the Rangers like to take cheap shots at superstars in Pittsburgh, but apparently they do. So this would be the Mario Lemieux Adam Graves incident, and this was 91. And the Penguins were on the power play, and Mario Lemieux at the point, well, I think he had the puck at one point. And Mario's like, you know, just handling the puck. And instead of like trying to get the puck, Adam Graves just literally takes his stick and just literally whacks him on the hands. There's no attempt to even go for the puck. Well, I mean, it's pretty blatant. This is probably one of the more blatant ones on here. But we'll play the audio here and you can hear some of what they reacted at the time.
Power play of the game. The Penguins lead the NHL. A penalty called on Graves.
Graves got his stick up in the face of Lemieux. Right away, Dan Marinelli's arm went up.
Well, thank God for Dan Marinelli. He hadn't got him in the face. He actually hit him right on the gloves. And he actually ended up breaking his wrist. And Mario was expected to be out a month because of that. But he did come back amazingly in game two of the next series against the Bruins. The best thing about this was the Penguins went on to win the cup and beat the Rangers and chant 1940 because they still hadn't won a cup. Although they would go on to win a cup a couple years later. But quote by, I think this was Phil Bork, the frustrating thing is there's nothing we can do to even it out. You want revenge. You want an eye for an eye, as the old saying goes, and you want the league to do something about it. Our best revenge is to beat them in the series. No doubt, though, we're the ones who got punished. We lost a player who can't be replaced for something that was very illegal. So you can throw fairness out the window in this case. A tainted series, that's a good way of putting it. And to their credit, the Graves got suspended 4 games for that. So we say that the NHL never does anything to protect their superstars. They did suspend Adam Graves for 4 games, which is a lot in the playoffs. That's almost a whole series, basically.
Yeah, I think to Phil Bork's point, though, like you can't – it's not an even trade because, like, who's Adam? Mario Lemieux was the best player in the world in 1992, and Adam Graves is – Adam Graves. Like, you know, if you really wanted to be fair, they would have suspended Messier for 4 games just to even it out.
I think Messier was hurt, though, I think.
Oh, that's right. Well, yeah. I suspend him anyway. But yeah, it was totally, you know, it's like, that's the thing that even in not even going back to the 2022 series with Trouba, it's like, even if you suspend Trouba, it's like, okay, but we lost Crosby, you know? So it's like, yeah. it's almost like there's nothing really to stop these guys from doing this. Now, like you said, you still have to step in and do something. And in this case, they actually did, to their credit, like you said.
And I called this the full perfect, because he wasn't me making a play on the puck or any. I mean, I guess Lemieux at least did have the puck, but that was intent to injure. You're whacking somebody in the hands. It wasn't like, oh, I went to go get the puck and it missed and I hit his hands. He went right for his hands, and there's just no two ways about it.
It was a baseball swing.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Like, how can you justify?
Yeah.
Like,
and he wasn't like along the ice, like, oh, I hit and I slid up his stick and got his hand. He just went right at his hands.
Right. Like the puck is on the ice, man. It's not, he's not holding it. You know, I just, that made no sense in terms of defending it.
So, moving back to football, we're going to go to 2005 and a gentleman named Kimo von Olhoffen. And we've covered this once or twice before. And once again, there's something about Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. And this is on the list at least twice. Teams from different sports, too. I don't know what it is when Pittsburgh and Cincinnati get together, whether it's baseball or football. Man, stuff happens. What happens is, the beginning of the game, it's the wild card playoffs. Cincinnati's at home. They got a good team. The Steelers got a good team, but they're a wild card. And the first or second play of the game, Carson Palmer hits Chris Henry for like a 70-yard pass play. But unfortunately, at the end of the play, Kimo on all off and kind of gets thrown to the ground and rolls into Carson Palmer's knee, tearing his knee and ending his game and his season. I guess, you know, I didn't think it was dirty at the time. I still don't think it's dirty. I think Cincinnati fans made too much of this, but we'll listen to the audio.
I did not see what happened to Carson Palmer. Kimo von Olhoffen hits him at the left knee. It looks like he's almost in the knee. That is a tough shot. And what an unbelievable throw he made down the field.
Kimo von Olhoffen, who began his career as a Bengal, 6 years, they're warming up Kitna. Palmer injured on only the second snap.
So if you watch the video, you see von Olhoffen kind of tries to turn his back, and he was kind of falling. He was breaking through the line past the guard or the tackle, and the guard kind of let him go, and he fell on the ground. I don't think there's any intent to injure here. It just was like, this is a you-know-what-happens play, and it was unfortunate for Carson Palmer. It gives Cincinnati fans a great excuse to whine and cry about it. But Kimo was not a – and once again, this is another, like, if this was a guy that was a dirty player, then I guess people would be more upset about it. But Kimo never played dirty. He was a very clean player and very nice guy, apparently. So, what are you going to say, Tim? I mean, are we going to, like I gave this a Lady Bing. I don't think Kimo – it was just an accident.
I agree. It was Kimo was just trying to make, he was just trying to charge in. He got tripped up with the offensive lineman.
He turned his back too. Like, you can tell he was trying. I don't think he was trying to hit him.
And I certainly get why the Bengal fans were upset. Like, it was literally, they had waited all these years to be in the playoffs. They won the division that year. This was like, they literally waited. What was it? Like 15 years or something since they had been in the playoffs. And then the second play of the game, their star quarterback gets knocked out. So I would have been upset too. But like you said, it's just one of those unfortunate things. It was not on purpose. It just wasn't. So.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what Kino's doing anymore. You know, Carson Palmer's retired. So, I mean, it's just that, like you said, I think too, like, they haven't won a lot. That hasn't helped. I think if they would have won a Super Bowl back when Joe Burrow made it, like, maybe that would have quieted this down a little bit. But
hey, here's a fun fact. the Bengals had 2 10-point leads in that game.
Yes,
even
they
after
did.
Palmer got hurt. So, yeah. like you said yeah. about the Penguins being up 2-0 against the Rangers in 2022, it's like, okay, but you don't have to fold. Yeah, you'd still yeah. play defense, right? Yeah. That guy didn't yeah. play defense. So, just saying.
It is kind of the same thing that happened to the Penguins that happened to the Bengals there. So,
yep.
Moving while sticking with football, and a guy who was voted the most dirty player in the NFL at one point, that would be one Hines Ward. And he had a hit on a guy. I think he looks like Fred Sanford from Sanford and Son at this point, but that would be Ed Reed. We're also going to include like his hit on Keith Rivers just to clean up the Hines Ward hits, put them kind of both together, compare and contrast these hits. The first one is definitely Ed Reed is, I think the Steelers are winning 35-7 at this point. And Ed Reed's just literally playing safety in the middle of the field, nowhere near a play. And Hines Ward just kind of clocks him and knocks him out for absolutely no reason. It's definitely one of the dirtier plays. I will definitely Hines Ward earned his dirtiest player reputation on this play.
Reed is woozy, and Hines Ward, who has been picking off Ravens DBs all night, able to do it here to Ed Reed, and that's what had Reed woozy and shaken up.
I love how he starts calling for the trainers as soon as he hits him.
Yeah.
That was just that was dirty. There was just no reason for that. I can't even justify it anymore. I mean, I know that's good old-fashioned hard playing, but at some point, you know, come on, this guy has a family to feed. Don't hit him. I mean, if there wasn't even like a play to be made, like it would have been one thing if there was a running back over there or something, but I don't know. That's Hines Ward for you.
Did you hear that clicking noise, Steve? That's the sound of like hundreds of people unsubscribing from our podcast because you dared impugn the great Hines Ward.
I love Hines Ward. He's a great physical player. It's just that one. It's 35-7. Come
yeah,
on.
I'm with you. That was a little bit of a, you know, and yeah, he was trying to block him, but there's a difference between blocking and just like getting a running start and just destroying a guy. And I know we hate the Ravens and we hated Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and all those guys who were kind of like secretly like applauding it. But, you know, just being totally objective. Yeah, that's dirty.
I rated that one the full perfect because it's just there's no football play to be made there. It just I mean, I guess at that point it was within the rules. He didn't hit him while he wasn't looking. I mean, he was kind of tangled up with another blocker and burst off of him and then hit Ed Reed. But it's 35-7, and I realize, oh, you should play every play hard, and maybe you should, but come on, that was a little much in my mind. Now, coming up to the next hit was there's a scoreless game in 2008, and Keith Rivers is the big first-round linebacker draft pick for the Cincinnati Bengals that's going to – they're going to take them to the Super Bowl. He's from USC. He's a great player. And there's an early play early in this game. Ben completes a pass to who was it? Spaeth. I think it was Matt Spaeth. And Matt Spaeth is running down the sideline for a first down, and Keith Rivers is pursuing him. And Hines Ward hits him and breaks his jaw. And I think Keith Rivers was out for the season because of that.
He was.
And so, I mean, this we'll listen to. I don't think this is a dirty hit, because there was a football play to be made, and you know Keith Rivers, you know, could have made the tackle, and I just
take again to Merelde Moore. He got right by the oncoming rush. The blitz was on by Jonathan Joseph.
Keep an eye on Hines Ward. I mean, this is a guy that throws his body around. He is a most complete receiver in the game. He is unselfish, a great competitor, and he's willing to block.
I mean, he literally like. And to, you know, Hines Ward's defense, Keith Rivers probably outweighs Hines Ward by, what, 100 pounds? I mean, he just knocked him completely over. And that's a play I like by Hines Ward. That's a good play. And, you know, watch out for Hines Ward. I guess. I mean, what is he supposed to do? Just let Keith Rivers tackle Matt Spaeth? I mean, I don't. And they actually changed the rules where you're not allowed to block people when they can't see you. I don't even know. Like, oh, if you come. No, they changed the rule where you can't come from your own back towards the other goal line and block somebody. And it's the dumbest rule. And it's just They went too far with that one. I mean,
again, the NFL is a reactive league, so that's
if you want to fine them and suspend them for the one against Ed Reed, I think that's uncalled for. But this is a scoreless game, and Keith Rivers is actually making a play on the ball. This isn't on the other side of the field. This isn't away from the ball. He's going to make a play. I mean, what are you supposed to do? I mean, set a pick like in basketball? I mean, I don't know.
It was a really vicious hit too. I mean, it was, and like you said, it was a block. I don't think it was dirty, but man, I was at that game. That's the only road Steeler game I've ever attended. And you could hear in that clip the gasp from the crowd in Cincinnati. Everybody's just like, oh, like you could just feel that hit. And when he didn't get up, you're like, boy, he's really hurt, because it was just such a hard hit. And you're right, Hines Ward, you did have to watch out for him, because he was going to block like that. And to your point, you know, safeties and cornerbacks and linebackers have been hitting people like that for years. So a lot of wide receivers not allowed to. That's kind of a double standard.
Yeah, I don't understand. I rated that one a Lady Bing because I don't think it was a dirty play. They changed the rules because of it, which I don't have a problem with that play at all. Maybe if he was not, you know, I don't know. I think it's within the rules, and if somebody's going to make a tackle, you're allowed to block them, but apparently not anymore, so go figure. Sticking with actually the name, Vontaze Burfict makes his first appearance on our Cheap Shot Countdown. Can you believe it took this long?
Well, you were just, you know, warming
up. I was just warming everybody up for
the main course.
Yeah. This is definitely the king of cheap shots outside of hockey. I can't think of another guy that has been. He's probably one of the dirtiest football players ever. I can't even like imagine if he would have played back in the 50s, somebody would have killed him, like pulling this crap. Like Chuck Bednarik and Dick Butkus and like those guys, they wouldn't have put up with this silliness. But anyway, moving on. Burfict on Big Ben and then Antonio Brown. This one I always thought was a little more borderline, because Big Ben actually has the football on this play, and your job is to tackle the guy with the football. Last time I checked, right, Tim? They haven't changed that rule yet, right?
Yeah, and this is in the 2015 playoff game, right?
Yes, this is the 2015 wild card game. I think the Steelers might have been leading at this point.
They were, yeah.
And so Burfict goes to tackle Big Ben on a sack, and he hits him, and Ben kind of falls down. And Ben gets hurt. He hurts his shoulder.
Roethlisberger in trouble. Decked at the three by Burfict, who has the football, but the quarterback is hurt. Roethlisberger
fell on his shoulder.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Now, if you watch Burfict stand up, he kind of knees Ben in the shoulder. And I think that's what people saw. And they were like, oh, my goodness, what a dirty cheap shot. I didn't think that. I think he was just standing up. I don't think that was intentional. But once again, this is like kind of the Matt Cook effect. Mm-hmm. Because Burfict by that point had a pretty good I don't know if I would use the word good. He had a reputation of doing things that weren't within the rules. And that like kind of happened, and I think that's a borderline call. And they didn't call throw a penalty on it, which you would not be allowed to tackle him because he came down with the full force of his body on top of Ben. You would not be able to make that sack nowadays. They would have thrown a penalty.
That would be a penalty today. But you're right. It if that was Geno Atkins, right, making that same sack, who is not a dirty player, and you know. He makes that sack and Ben gets hurt. You're like, okay, man, that just sucks that Ben got hurt. But nobody would have, I doubt anybody would have been accusing Geno Atkins of playing dirty. But because it was Burfict, I mean, my goodness. And he had already taken out Le'Veon Bell that season. That was the same season he ended Le'Veon Bell seasons. And then he you know, injures Ben in the playoffs. And then, of course, later in the game, where you're going to get to that.
Yeah, so later on in the game, Cincinnati's actually, I think, ahead, right?
Nice.
By a point, right? Yes. Yeah. And so the Steelers are last gasp. Ben separated shoulder. They stole Brown. So he throws a pass to Antonio Brown And it was definitely a bad idea to hit Antonio Brown in the head, because that had been illegal for years. And it wasn't even close. The pass was like way over Brown's head. So if he just doesn't hit him, it's an incomplete pass. This is a dumb move.
Roethlisberger from the pocket. Middle of the field, incomplete. Oh, a flag does come in.
Went to the head.
Lewis Harris is going to be flagged for this on the hit on Antonio Brown, and it's going to put the Steelers in field goal range. Perfect was in there too.
Yeah, he literally, like, there was just no reason. He was running past Brown. If he just, like, doesn't run into Brown or lower his shoulder, I think if he stays upright and runs past Brown and kind of tries to move out of the way, they probably don't call a penalty on that. The ball was way over Brown's head. There was no way he was going to catch that. It wasn't a bang-bang play. I mean, maybe. Do you think slow-mo made it look, like, worse than it was? I don't think so. I think this was just a dumb play by a dirty player at the worst possible time for the Bengals.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect was, like, an addict for dirty play. You know, it's like... yeah. It's like, well, one drink won't kill me. And he just, it's like you said, the whole season's on the line. And they could have stopped the Steelers there, and they could have won, and they could have advanced in the playoffs. But he, to him, it was more important to, you know, and that was the Bengals of that era. It's like, okay, you may have beaten us, you may have ended our season, but we clubbed your guy in the head. So there's that.
I gave this one the full perfect. Actually, it's funny. I was watching a highlight, I guess, because I was looking these up. So the algorithm started on a certain, you know, video sharing service, started showing me cheap shots. And Steve Atwater, who was pretty good for a couple of his own, kind of did a very similar hit to this in Super Bowl 31, I want to say. Yeah, 31. What was the one Denver finally won their first Super Bowl?
32.
Okay. Yeah. So it's been Super Bowl 32. And this was after Denver had scored to take the lead late in the game. And I remember this play because Brett Favre kind of threw it, and it was at least a little closer than this, the pass, but Atwater and the other defender, he hit more the other defender for the Broncos than the receiver for the Packers. But man, it was very similar to this perfect hit, but it wasn't considered dirty back then, but and Atwater actually hurt himself on the play because he led with his head. So I mean, you know, there was kind of a precedent from years past, but that was like, what would that have been, 1997? So, I mean, my goodness, by that point, it had been 20 years. So maybe you should stop doing that. Yeah. So they definitely had changed the rule years before. So definitely the full perfect, and I think that's the end of our Vontaze perfect plays, Tim.
Yeah, we could have probably done a whole podcast, but he doesn't really deserve the time. So
he's not in the league anymore. He went to the Raiders, and he did other stuff too. Like, remember twisting Cam Newton's leg after he scored a touchdown? And it wasn't just the Steelers who he did.
He got suspended for the rest of the season at one point for, I want to say it was a guy for the Colts that he hit. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, again, that's, like I said, the NFL finally, you know, it took them 50 years, but they finally decided, hey, we're not going to allow this kind of stuff anymore. And like I said, maybe the NHL will get there someday too.
Sticking with the NFL here, Turkey Jones, or I guess the guy's name is actually John Jones, but I don't know why he's called Turkey. I didn't really look that up.
Speaking of stuff that the NFL allowed 50 years ago.
Yeah. So this is Terry Bradshaw, and this is in the same season. I think it's 1976 yes, again.
Correct.
So it's week 5 of 1976 season, and he's sacked by the Cleveland defender, and basically he decides that he's going to suplex him onto the ground. He pile drives a Bradshaw into the ground, and Bradshaw literally is paralyzed for like a couple days and does not play for 3 more weeks. Cleveland did win the game 18-16. This is a pretty scary moment.
On the final sack, Jones' exuberance sent Steeler fortunes for the game and perhaps the season crashing to the ground. Any remaining hopes Pittsburgh may have harbored about a record third straight Super Bowl were shattered by a stunning 18-16 defeat to Cleveland. With Bradshaw out for the next 3 to 4 games and a 1-4 record, Pittsburgh's occupancy of last place in football's toughest division may not be so temporary a visit after all.
Boy, that was very pro Cleveland, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you watch that hit on the video, it's nasty. He drops him on his head, and you can see Terry's pretty badly hurt. He said he couldn't feel his hands or feet for a couple days after that. He couldn't really move. And it was funny because, like, back then they took him off on a stretcher, but he said they didn't have any place to put him in the locker room, so they took a locker room door off and, like, made, like, a makeshift, like, table out of it and strapped them to the door to immobilize him. And then when he went back to Pittsburgh they had to send him on a flight. They put him on top of the seats on the plane so that he wouldn't move. So, thank goodness medical care has evolved since then. Terry obviously survived and won a couple Super Bowls. They did find, Jones for this play. He got a fine $3,000, which that's a pretty big fine. Like, what Atkinson only got $1,500 for a much more blatant cheap shot.
Yeah,
he actually was sacking Terry Bradshaw. The only thing he did wrong was he, like, flipped them. Like, Bradshaw, I guess, had been getting away. He was like a scrambler still, and instead of just, like, taking him to the ground, he flipped him upside down and pile-drived him on his head. And that was, if he just would have tackled him, I don't think anybody would even remember this play except for the Steelers lost.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you go back and read the media accounts at the time, they interview some of the Steelers' defensive players. And a lot of them at the time say they didn't think it was dirty. They understand when you have a quarterback like Bradshaw, like you said, Steve, that could scramble, you can't just wrap him up because he's going to get away. And so he, you know, Bradshaw was kind of squirming, and he felt the best way to tackle him was to pull him backwards, you know, and he ended up spiking him on his head. I don't know that he consciously thought, like, if I do this, I'll spike him right onto his neck. Mm-hmm. It looked probably worse than his intent was. It was, I would say, maybe more reckless than dirty, if that makes sense.
I gave this an almost perfect, because I don't think there was necessarily, I think it was like, oops, I went too far.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of
reckless
intent.
Yeah.
And reckless is a good way to describe it. He wasn't a dirty player. I haven't heard anybody ever describe this guy as a dirty player. Cleveland sucked back then. I don't know what else to say about this. I know your mother was rather upset about this play.
I wish I could have my mom on this podcast just to talk about this play, because
she is not like this. She's not like Turkey Jones at all.
50 years later, she it was like it was yesterday to her. And how scary it was. You know, she's like, I thought he was dead. I literally thought they had killed him on live.
It looks
TV.
Bad. It's bad. And you can see he is still moving a little bit. So I don't know about Terry saying he was paralyzed, because you could see on the replay, like, he was moving his legs a little bit. After.
Sort of, but it was almost
like a reaction.
Aftershocks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It looked horrific.
70s football. Yeah, baby.
Yeah. All right.
I think I never felt the intent was there for him. So
no, like I said, I think it was reckless. I don't think he was consciously thinking, I'm going to do this. Yeah. But at the same time, he didn't have to lift him up in the air like that. It was just reckless.
So, sticking with football, there was a game in 1995, the home opener for the Steelers, and they always go well, right? Yeah. This game was a rough one, and the Steelers ended up winning this game. But they used all three quarterbacks. Neil O'Donnell had gotten hurt, and I think he broke his pinky finger or something on his throwing hand. So Mike Tomczak comes in, and he's doing okay until he decides to scramble. And he is scrambling, and he runs back towards his own, like, goal line. They're in, like, I think they were on the other side of the Lions side of the field. And Terry Scroggins literally knocks him in the next week, I think, as the announcer says here. It's one of the worst hits I've ever seen. He actually runs into the defender,
First down and 10. Good time for Thompson. Now it collapses. Oh, it's knocked into next week Tracy Scroggins.
He's hurt.
Tom Zach is knocked silly.
Tracy Scroggins, not Terry Scroggins. My apologies.
Did you recognize the other? So I think Kevin Harlan was the play-by-play guy, but did you hear the guy going, he's hurt, he's hurt? Did you recognize
No, I didn't know voices? Who was that. Yeah.
It was Gary Glanville.
Jerry approved of that.
Yeah. I was at this game too, and what I remember about that was when Tom Zach was scrambling, you could see Scroggins running from that other direction, and then you saw Tom Zach like turn around right into him, and it was like in slow motion. You're like, no, Mike, like stop, and just. I mean, you could see that coming, and you could hear the gasp in the crowd, like, oh. But I'll let you state your opinion here too, Steve, but I think that was just bad timing and a good hit.
And to his credit, you know, Jim Miller did come in. I think Mike Tomczak only missed the series after that.
Yeah, Tomczak actually finished the game.
Yeah, and they won the game. He actually played well enough at the end, and he got him in the field goal range, and Norm Johnson kicks a game-winning field goal.
Yeah.
So, Mike Tomczak, unreal. I mean, this hit looks nasty. I mean, just because the fact that he was literally running one way, and he gets de-cleated, like, in the air, and Scroggins pile drives him into the turf. It was unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen a hit quite that hard, but I mean, I called it a Lady Bing. That's just football, man. You don't want to get hit like that. Go play baseball or basketball or something, because that, or track and field, because that was just good old clean fashion. Good job by Scroggins, bad job by Mike Tomczak, but good on Mike Tomczak for being a tough guy and coming back in. And guess all those years with Ditka paid off, huh? Switching back to hockey, we're going to does anybody remember Darius Kasparaitis? Who doesn't? Do you remember his hit on Eric Lindros?
Oh, yeah.
So March 7th, 1998, a game at the Civic Arena. I think the Flyers were on a power play winning 4-2. And Darius Kasparaitis hits Eric Lindros with probably – I call it borderline. Lindros at least had the puck, and he was entering the zone. So, I mean, it's a legit hockey play. But, I mean, what happened was Lindros gets concussed. And this is one of those, it's probably more because of how this guy got hurt than anything else. And I think Kasparaitis had a little bit of a reputation, too. Back to the one.
Flyers very concerned. Lindros took a blow to the head, knocked the helmet right off, and he is dazed. Now he's in trouble. Lindros, oh, shoulder. You can see Mike Lindros had the puck in his feet. That's a good clean hit.
Yeah, I think I agree with, like, he had the puck at his feet. The puck was there. Separate man from puck. That's nothing dirty there. The Flyers didn't appreciate it because they're the Philadelphia Flyers. And to his defense, like, what was, like, Lindros was, like, what, 6'5", 250, and Kasparaitis was, like, a normal-sized human? I mean, Lindros was huge. And for Kasparaitis to take him out like that, and then Lindros after that had a lot of – I remember had problems with the concussions after that. And I think this is a Lady Bing. This is a legit hit. This is a hockey play. He probably gets fined for this now. Maybe he doesn't. It's the NHL. I don't know. What say you, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad this one was later on the list, because you could accuse us of being, you know, homers, because we said the Trouba hit and the Adam Graves and all that. But this, you know, this was literally Eric Lindros had a problem with looking down. Like, yeah. He did that a lot. I think because he was so big, Steve, that and probably most of his career before he got into the NHL, he was 10 times bigger than every other person he played against.
So somebody hit him, they just bounced off.
They just bounced off. So he had this bad habit of looking down, and he was like, he kind of lost control of the puck there, and he was literally like, had his head like literally like he was like dropped a contact lens. Like, that's what he was doing, right? He was like, where'd it go? Where'd it go? And that's what happened. And that wasn't the last time it happened. The Scott Stevens hit in the playoffs when they were playing the Devils a couple of years later was a very similar play where he had his head down and Scott Stevens hit him and he got really, really hurt. And I know the Flyer fans were all mad about that and they're all mad about Casper, but he just didn't. That was how he got himself hurt, which he didn't have his head on a swivel. Most hockey players do. And I think just because he was so big and so strong, he never really thought he had to worry about that. And unfortunately for him, he ended up having some real concussion issues.
And you know what, to his credit, Lindros didn't hold it against Kasparaitis, actually recruited Kasparaitis to the Rangers when Lindros was with the Rangers. So no hard feelings. I think he realized it was a good clean hit. He's a mammoth of a guy. He's just a big person. He's one of the biggest hockey players, like skill guys. Like he wasn't a defenseman. Was he a center? Yeah, he was a center. He was just huge. For Kasparaitis to do that, I still call it Lady Bing, legit hit. No intent to injure, just caught him with his head down. And, you know, and that's kind of the difference between, like, in football now, that would be a fine because, oh my goodness, it looks so horrible.
Yeah. And Lindros was, like you said, he was kind of a freak of nature, really skilled, really talented player. Flyers were so lucky to have him. I mean, think about how many championships they won. I got to look this up.
They won zero, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, zero. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Well, they never really had the goaltending. I think that's been their biggest bugaboo is they've never had the goaltending to go along with. They've had some talented players, but just never had the goaltending. Oh, well, going back to baseball in a little city in Ohio that's on the Ohio River. Welcome back to the conversation, Cincinnati, Ohio. So it's the ninth inning of a regular season game. The Reds are good. The Pirates are good. Hey, what a shocker. It's August of 2012, Tim, and the Pirates are playing meaningful baseball. Woohoo. And the Reds are too. What Twilight Zone episode of have we stumbled into, huh? The Reds have a guy named Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman is another person that is like 6'7". No, he's not. He's like 6'4". But he's a left-hander. And you think, well, lefties, they're crafty and throw like 80 miles an hour and throw curveballs and stuff. Nope. This guy throws 101 miles per hour. He is basically Randy Johnson if Randy Johnson was Cuban. So the Reds are up 3-0 in the ninth inning because Chapman's a closer. And they have two outs in the ninth. And Andrew McCutchen, who's he was basically on pace to become the MVP of baseball, at least the National League. Chapman decides it's a good idea to bean him with nobody on and two men out. I am not quite sure why you do this.
Oh, man. Wow. 101 miles per hour. And McCutchen, understandably so, upset.
I don't know what the logic was there. You could even see the catcher. Like, maybe that looked intentional to me. Maybe he just was trying to throw inside and he lost control of something, you know, it could happen. But at the time I've always thought that was intentional and it doesn't even make any sense to hit anybody in that situation. So I'm not sure what that was besides maybe he was trying to intimidate McCutchen for later in the series if he came up with men on base and he figured he had a chance to do that. So I don't know, Tim, any figuring out the logic on this one.
I'll probably disagree with you on this one. I think the pitch just got away from him because, like you said, there's no motive. They have a 3-run lead. You don't want to start something. You're trying to close out the game. You don't want to start something by putting a guy on base. So
especially McCutchen's a good base stealer too.
Right. Yeah. It makes no sense for him to do it on purpose. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. The guy threw so hard that you're going to have one or two just maybe get away from you. That's all.
All right. Well, I give you that. I just chalked this up to Cincinnati teams doing stupid stuff late in games. I gave them a full perfect because I still think it's intentional, but I can see your point. I don't know. I never. I remember this happening. I think it's just he was trying to intimidate the Pirates. I really do. I totally think that. And,
well, those two guys are teammates now.
Yeah, that's the whole, like, you know, PS to all this. And I don't think that this is another one of those cases like Lindros and Kasparaitis. There's no hard feelings. It's like, just good, clean baseball. And it wasn't like he hit him in the head, and it wasn't like anybody got permanently injured or career ended. So we're going to stay in Cincinnati, that great American city, right, Tim? Only we're going to bow back to 1974. Neither of us were alive in 1974, but hey, we're having fun, right? It's the Nixon administration? No, it's the Ford administration. Gerald Ford's in the White House. Watergate has happened. Good time is being had by America, right? So Doc Ellis is on the mound, and Doc Ellis is sober, I think, for this game. Although what he does doesn't make any sense. So Doc Ellis decides that he's really sick of losing to the Reds. And he decides, I'm going to burn a bean every player that comes up to bat for the Cincinnati Reds in the first inning. This isn't like late in the game in a blowout. I'm just going to go for it. And he does. That's the best part. He hit Pete Rose. Who's the guy who was the announcer on Sunday Night Baseball? Joe Morgan, I think.
Yeah.
And then he was going to bean John. There was another guy in there that I don't recognize, but he couldn't hit that guy because Doc Ellis in his own interview said that guy was like playing dodgeball at that point. He was like dancing around, so he couldn't hit him. And he was going to bean Johnny Bench next, but Danny Murtaugh caught on to what was going on and took him out. This was not I lost one. This was intentional by Doc Ellis. It just didn't make much of make sense. And because it's 1974, we don't have any video. I wish we would have had video of this. Now that would have been fun to see the reaction of what was going on. But it's just the full Vontaze perfect. There's just no like you literally took yourself out of the game, which means your bullpen has to come in the first inning with the bases loaded. There's just no reason to do this. But it's Doc Ellis. So what, the late Doc Ellis.
Ellis was on a lot of drugs at the time.
I don't know. He didn't say he was high this time. I mean, he pitched a no-hitter on LSD, apparently, but I don't know. Any logic why you would just start beating people just to start? I guess he's sending a message. I'm not sure. Well, that's the end of the Cincinnati. There's one left here, and we're going to stick in baseball, and I feel rather passionately about this one. And that would be Chung Ho Gong in the takeout slide by Chris Coughlin of your Chicago Cubs. And I never had an opinion on the Chicago Cubs until this happened. And I really cannot stand the Chicago Cubs still to this day. Like, I hope it just rankled me to no end. It was, if it would have been for Cleveland playing them, I would have been all in for whoever was playing them in that World Series. But it just had to be freaking Cleveland. And, you know, they win their stupid little World Series. Ooh, congratulations. You won World Series in 100 years. The Pirates still have four more than you in those 100 years. So, and they're the crappiest team. Okay. So September 7th is really.
Take a breath, Steve. Take a breath.
Calm down. Happy thoughts. Yeah. September 17th, 2015, during a game against the Cubs, they had a double play. And Chris Coughlin, who's a total bum, decides to slide in the center field and not second base. And if you watch the replay, his leg literally catches his knee. There's no attempt to slide, no nothing. It's just totally let's injure somebody. And Kung Ho Gong, his left knee is totally messed up. He tears his MCL. He gets put up. He's done for the season. He missed the remainder of the year. The postseason and the wild card game, which the Pirates ended up hosting. Oh, Joe Maddon and his genius, you know, play just said, this is just hard, good old fashioned baseball. Another bum. There ever was a bum. It just total thuggery and ridiculousness and goonish. And this is like something that should have been done in hockey. And it's so funny because here we'll play the audio. But Chase Utley ends up doing the exact same thing, and it's funny. Baseball then changes the rules because this is still within the rules.
There's a ground ball to second. And the throw to first got him. Jung Ho is hurt. Play is still alive, but a takeout slide by Coughlin. He went after Jung Ho, and Jung Ho got rolled over. And he ended up sliding awkwardly, but yeah, boy, he went right after his shin.
What part of second base is in center field, Tim? I just want to know.
He didn't even touch second base.
No.
Like I that was so unbelievably blatant. And like you said, that just the hypocrisy of baseball, where it's like they wait till somebody that they care about gets hurt, then they make a rule change. Again, very similar to the NFL.
Yeah, Chase Utley did it to Ruben Tejada of the Mets. And then the Major Baseball was like, oh, maybe we should change the rules. And what had happened was they had to play a rule called the neighborhood rule to kind of avoid this, where, okay, you're in the neighborhood of second, we'll consider you touching second. And it's kind of like, so once they bought instant replay, they had to get rid of that because now you actually have to go and touch second. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, you can kind of blame instant replay. That's why he had to go touch second and throw to first. And the neighborhood rule is such a ridiculous rule anyway. Like, oh, well, I meant to go. You can say that anytime. You know, it's just, it was too much of a judgment call. The better call is what they changed it to, is you have to slide in the second or you're just going to be out. And they did the same thing at home plate when a couple people got concussions. Buster Posey got hurt. And once again, that's another, it's a San Francisco big team from a big city that, and Buster Posey, everybody likes him. He got hurt. So, you know, everybody got, you know, all up in arms. But, and of course, Bob Nutting does nothing about this because he's Bob Nutting and he's too cheap and impotent to do anything about it. And it's just, once again, you know, you need an owner to stand up for your players. And this literally effectively ended Chung Ho Gon's career. And that's the saddest part, is this guy was a good player and looked like he was going to have some more good years. And then he started drinking and got some DUIs. And, you know, you could say, well, maybe he's going to do that anyway. I don't know. I think maybe if he's in baseball and not injured, he doesn't do that. So if I ever see Chris Coughlin, I think he's a coach somewhere, I'm going to boo. If I'm at a game and he's there, I'm going to boo him mercilessly. I don't care if he's in the dugout. It is also like you want to talk about institutional racism. How is that not racist? How is that racist against Asian people? How is that not racist against? It's like there's so many levels to this and so much crap that this is. And it's number one, the Pirates are a small market. Number two, they knew they could get away with it because Bob Nutting isn't going to play. Number three, it's somebody, a player they don't really care about. It's just like, if this would have been Andrew McCutchen or any other player on the Pirates, they probably would have said something, but they didn't. And, you know, poor Chung Ho Gon got hurt, and he really had a good season that year. So maybe I'm overestimating Chung Ho Gong's worth to the Pirates. What say you, Tim?
Well, it was just, even if he wouldn't have had a good season, it's still just, it was totally unjust ending his season, because you literally were just trying to kick him in the leg so that your guy at first base would be safe. And that's, you know, the takeout slide was supposed to be you slide into second base and take out the guy in the process. But that's why Kong had moved over so far off the bag to avoid that. And he sticks out his leg and takes out his knee. I mean, I don't know. You can't get any more dirty than that, I think. But it's baseball, and that's, like you said, that was like, well, that's a takeout play. That's been happening for years and blah, blah, blah. So it's why they have to make rules around these things. They have to like player safety rules. And even though baseball did it way too late and they did it for the wrong reasons, at least they made a rule that's going to hopefully protect that kind of stuff in the future. If there's anything good that came out of this, it was that.
Yeah, and Joe, I didn't look up the Joe Madden. If you want to, you can look up the Joe Madden quotes, who was the manager of the Cubs, like justifying it. And yeah, it wasn't, I don't even think he had, like, it, just the stuff he said, oh, it wasn't dirty. And it was the most twisted logic ever. It's like, oh, he was sliding, like everybody kept saying, oh, he was sliding in the second. Not unless second base is in center field. There's just no, you watch that replay, it's intent to injure. That's everything. The ball's gone. There's just no logical reason to to do that. But hey, the Cubs got away with it and got awarded a World Series for their trouble. But yay, big market Chicago. And guess what? Chicago stinks again. They're like the Mets. They spend billions of dollars every year and you don't win anything. So ha ha ha. At least we don't spend billions of dollars and don't win anything. So eat it there, Cubs fans.
Yeah, we just spend very little.
Don't win anything. Yeah. And bring back players that are well past their prime, like Chapman and McCutcheon. Oh, both those guys were good like 10 years ago. But anyway, that's it. If there's any cheap shots I missed, or if you'd like to come take a cheap shot at me, go find Tim. No. But, thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate everybody listening. And, email us if there's anything we missed. Check us out at our website, all the podcast streaming services you've been listening to. Just thankful for everybody listening. And God bless and have a great rest of your day.